You are listening to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast, where we aim to dispel the myths, debunk the stories, and help people better understand the role of the doula in the 21st century. I am your host, Sophie Brigstock, owner of Nurturing Birth and course facilitator, and I invite you to grab a cuppa, pop on your headphones, and listen in as I chat to doulas, birth keepers, and nurturing birth friends about all things perinatal.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast. I'm really, really excited today to have Erin Fung with me from Better Birth UK. And the reason I'm excited is because the theme of this season that we are doing is what I wish people knew. And I have a feeling that there are so many directions that this conversation could go in. So I'm just excited to explore and to hear more of what Erin has to say. So a huge warm welcome to you, Erin. Lovely to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so flattered that you invited me. It's nice to be on the other side of a podcast for a change.
Yeah, because you host a very successful podcast yourself, which I've been very privileged to be on myself. I always love giving people the opportunity to introduce themselves. Would you like to tell everyone who's listening a little bit more about you and what you do?
Sure. So like you said, my name's Erin. I am a mum of three. So I have three children who are 3, 7 and 10. I am a hypnobirthing and antenatal instructor, and I started my business a month before COVID hit, which is a fantastic launching. it's been a massive success. I feel very, very privileged to have been able to kind of change careers and start doing something that I am genuinely really, really passionate about. So I teach antenatal classes. I do in person. I live in Sevenoaks in Kent, but I also teach primarily online, which means that I reach a lot more people than I would if I just stuck locally. I love what I do. I love reading about birth and talking about birth and everything in between. So
yeah. And that really shines through in your content. So we're avid followers of you on Instagram, and I love how you're kind of no nonsense, aren't you? Really, you really kind of call things out and say things how they are, which I love.
Yeah, I am. My mum always said that I should have been a lawyer because I'm really argumentative. Maybe that comes across in my content that I think maybe I'm quite concise in how I present information. But yeah, I'm not afraid to call out stuff that I think is incorrect or I think is damaging. And I mean, I think it's important. I get a lot of, you know, trolling and pushback for it. Because it obviously triggers people and it upsets some people. But I do it because I am passionate about making sure that women and birthing people are well informed. And there's so much misinformation out there that people end up going into birth with misconceptions and you know, falsehoods, which are damaging. Yeah. So I'm quite open and frank about calling some of those things out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that leads very nicely on. So we were talking, I was saying at the beginning, the theme for this season is what I wish people knew. And I was really intrigued to hear what you wanted to dive into. So tell me, what comes up most for you when I say that?
So I think probably from personal experience, because that's what got me into birth work, was my first birth. And looking at what I wish I knew with my first birth and my pregnancy is that it's really important to not wing it and go blindly into birth. And that obviously can go down a million different routes in conversation, you know, about a lot of those myths that we bust when we talk about birth. But I think it's really important that pregnant people do some level of prep and antenatal education before they give birth. Yeah. And that's what I didn't do with my first, and I paid for it. And my daughter has paid for it, you know, long-term health-wise. Your birth is your first birth is not a practice. It's not a trial run. That's a real human being that you're giving birth to. And we put so much effort into prepping for everything else in our lives.
Yeah.
We do zero prep when we give birth, and it seems bonkers.
Yeah. Why do you think people don't do prep when it comes to birth?
I think there's multiple different reasons. I think one is that we have this belief that we should be able to put our full faith and trust into our care providers, which we should, absolutely. In an ideal world, we should be able to go into hospital, if that's where you choose to give birth, and trust the advice and the procedures and the recommendations that are being given to you, and yeah, not have to question anything. Yeah. I think most people think and have that belief that, well, if the doctor's saying it, they've done, you know, however many years of training and qualifications, they're the experts, do what they say. I think the other reason that we don't question things and we don't do prep is because we're women. And I know I'm going to sound like I'm being like a raging feminist here, but, you know, I think we are particularly, and it's unique in maternity care and women's health, that we do kind of, we're expected to be compliant and to listen to what we're being told and to do what we're being told. And that's kind of ingrained in girls from a very, very young age, to be a good girl and do what you are told. And I think those two things combined mean that people just don't prep for their births, because there is all these different factors which are affecting how they're feeling about their coming birth.
Yeah.
And it's damaging. It's really, really damaging. It's really important that people do prep.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really interesting. So you're talking about how you use the expression go blindly into it. And you're talking about having faith in the medical system when people, if they choose to go into hospital. And as you say, like, we want to have faith in our doctors, we want to have faith in our system, don't we? And they have the experience of being around birth all day and every day. I think for me, the flip side of that coin, there is a difference between having faith in your medical providers and giving your power away. That yep. whole thing of like, I am just a body on a bed. I'm just going to give myself over to these people, rather than having autonomy, rather than being involved in the decision-making process, rather than putting yourself at the center of the care.
Yeah, and it's a really, really important point, because I think people may have this misconception that to have a positive birth, you have to have an unmedicalized birth.
Yeah.
That people who have home births are exclusively having positive births, and that's not the case.
No.
Okay? To have a positive experience, you need to feel in control.
Yeah.
You need to feel involved in that process, and it's the lack of control and lack of autonomy that leads to people having negative and traumatic experiences. And part of getting that control is understanding what's going on, educating yourself so that you understand the process, you understand why the consultant is recommending something or the midwife is telling you to do something, and also having the knowledge and understanding that you have rights yeah. and that you can decline things if you want. And it sounds like a really obvious thing to say that you can say no, but lots of pregnant people don't realize that you can say no.
Well, how many people say no in their day-to-day life? I mean, I work a lot as a coach with people who really struggle with boundaries, and no is a boundary. And that idea of saying no to something, and I think, again, you know, without wanting to be very binary about it, but I suspect that more women struggle with the no saying than perhaps men do. So yeah, that kind of, when you're in birth, when you are in a more vulnerable, a more heightened emotional state, perhaps the saying no might be even more challenging than normal.
Yeah. And you're saying no to somebody who you perceive as an authority.
Yes.
You know, there is a power imbalance when you give birth in hospital.
Yes.
You know, you are saying no to a person in a white coat who is perceived as the expert. That's a really hard conversation to have.
Yeah.
Never mind the fact that you're in labor at the same time.
Yes.
So, which is why I also think that getting a doula is
Well, I'm so glad you say that. But it is that thing, you know, as children, the messages that we receive are, you talked about the good girl thing, but you know, we are very much taught to respect people in authority, aren't we? And, you know, put a white coat on somebody and walk into their work environment, not our, you know, a familiar situation for us, then I think we are immediately going to be, you know, perhaps putting them on pedestals or, you know, making them authority figures for ourselves.
Yeah. And then you've got the whole, you know, we talk in hypnobirthing about the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems and which one you should be in and which one you're likely to be in that unfamiliar setting. And if you're in your sympathetic nervous system and you're stressed and you're anxious and you don't know what the hell is going on, you enter your freeze, fight or flight or fawn state.
Yes. Fawn, so, big one.
You know, and that makes them kind of compliant and agreeable, and they don't want to, you know, they don't want to make a fuss, and they will just do what they're told.
Yeah.
So there's so many different things at play, I think, which are affecting how people are giving birth. And I think the crux of it is making sure that you have done some prep beforehand, so that you're aware of all these different subtle shifts in emotions and, you know, circumstances and hormones and everything else, which all combine to either give you a really positive experience or a very traumatic one.
Yeah. Learning about the fawn response and freeze too was a game changer. You know, when I started to look at how I have responded through my life to sort of adrenalized situations, and recognizing I'm not a fighter and my legs never would carry me anywhere. So, you know, I became that good girl and that I'll do what I'm told and befriend people. And I did that. I've done that left, right and center in medical rooms through my life. So learning about the responses, the sympathetic nervous system responses, I think is really, really important. And understanding how we naturally respond in situations. So yeah, I mean, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? When you're talking about educating yourself antenatally, what does that mean? Like, what are you asking somebody to educate themselves about?
I mean, God, how long is a piece of string? I mean, there's so much that a pregnant person could educate themselves about. And I think it's really important that as a pregnant person, you don't have this belief that you kind of need to be a unqualified midwife to learn all the things in order to have a positive birth, because that's not the case. And I think some level of prep is going to be better than nothing, whether that's you reading a hypnobirthing book or watching birth videos, just, you know, positive birth videos. I think some level of prep is going to be better than nothing.
Yeah.
I do think, obviously I'm biased because I teach antenatal classes, but I do think that having a little bit of knowledge around what happens when you go into labor, you know, and how to facilitate that, I think is important, because we know that the hospital environment is not conducive to progressing labor, right? It's the polar opposite of what our brains are seeking in order to produce the hormones to progress labor.
Yeah.
So knowing how to control and adapt that environment to help your labor progress is, I think, is really important.
Yeah.
Because most of us are putting ourselves in a place that is not conducive to birth.
Yeah. And that's the thing that shocks so many people, you know, the people who haven't done the preparation, that surprises them so much. You know, people coming on doula courses, for example, people who've given birth themselves, who've been at births, who've been in hospital environments, when we start on morning one of day one, exploring physiology. And when I talk about that, it's never about saying you should have this kind of birth. Like you, it's, you know, home birth doesn't work for everybody. Hospital births can be fantastic. Cesareans can be life-changing. Elective cesareans can be the most positive option for somebody. But having an understanding of physiology from the get-go, I think, can be so empowering. And understanding how those particular hormones, I mean, you know, wouldn't it be lovely if they just adapted and we could just turn the switch on so that they flooded the body regardless of where you were, but that they are shy, they tend to be easily switched off, and I have people on courses, people who've been drawn to coming and being a doula, who've never learned that stuff, who don't know that, who are like, what? Wow, this is game-changing stuff.
And it isn't stuff that we get taught.
No. And midwives. I mean, I've had midwives on the courses who've been, sorry, what? Which has blown my mind.
Crazy, absolutely crazy. And, you know, when we learn about sex education, we learn about reproduction at school, we just told not to get pregnant. Don't
catch
UTI. Here's how to put a condom on. Here's a horrific birth video to put you off ever having sex until you are married.
Yes, yes.
That's basically what reproductive education is like in schools.
They're exactly the two things. It's all about protective sex and it's about human reproduction and nothing else.
Yeah. It doesn't prepare us for giving birth.
No. Or for anything to do with relationships and pleasure and understanding our bodies and consent and all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all really important things. And also all applicable to birth.
All applicable, yeah.
You know, pleasure. I mean, people can have orgasmic births.
Yeah.
When I tell people that, they kind of, they're like, their jaw drops. They're like, oh God, no, why? But it, you know, we want hormones to be flowing and flooding your body. You know, what got your baby in there, unless it's an IVF pregnancy, is gonna be what gets out.
Yeah.
And consent, also really, really important. Important when you're making a baby, important when you're having a baby. And, you know, coming back to that, that kind of advocacy and consent point, that's another thing that I think is really important when we think about antenatal education. Mm. Understanding your rights, understanding that you can say no, understanding that you can decline things. You know, like I said earlier, I do feel like this is more applicable to maternity care than other aspects of our lives. You know, if we get tonsillitis and we go and see the GP and, you know, they say you need some antibiotics, then they write you a prescription and you leave that GP surgery with your prescription. It's down to you whether you go and take that to the pharmacy and take the pills, right?
Yes.
Nobody's going to call up later and go, have you taken the pills? No one's going to call on you. It's
day five. You're meant to have taken your 10th pill today.
Right? We are grown adults. We are expected to make decisions. You know, the doctor has made a recommendation down to us whether we want to go with their recommendation or, you know, try something else. But when it comes to maternity care and birth, there's quite often no kind of discussion about, well, here's the options. Do you want to do this? Quite often it's, this is what you need to do. We will not let you. You have to. We accept that blindly. Yeah. Without questioning it. And sometimes those recommendations are not what's right for you, you know, either instinctively or on a, you know, a situational kind of basis, they're not the right thing for you to be doing. Mm. And, you know, for me, going back to, you know, my experience of my first birth and why I think prep's so important, I was offered an induction. Mm-hmm. And I was given no reason why. It was purely, you've got to 40 weeks. We're going to book you in for an induction next week because it's quiet. That was the reason that I was given.
Right. And
I didn't know anything, right? I hadn't done any prep. I hadn't done any antenatal education. And I went, okay, fine, book me in. Mm-hmm. My daughter was not ready. I know she was not ready. You know, she was tiny when she was born. She needed a little bit longer in there to grow and develop. And I didn't know what I was asking for, you know, when I asked for pethidine, which then made her really drowsy and she slept through the entire night afterwards. And then I got shouted at by the midwife for not waking her up every 3 hours to feed her because I didn't know that I was supposed to do that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what I was asking for when I asked for the epidural. You know, all of these things are really important because now I've got a child who has suffered with silent reflux for her first year, had failure to thrive, didn't grow, wouldn't feed, ended up in speech and language therapy, has horrific eczema, has lifelong allergies. And I think all of those things, not to mention probably the emotional and mental health side effects of her birth, are all to do with how she was born. And that's me, quite frankly, for not prepping and not preparing and not understanding that I could have said no to that one induction which probably would have changed how she was born and would have affected her health and my mental health as well.
What I hear in that is something that I hear a lot, which is people turning it back on themselves, like blaming themselves. It's really common, isn't it, after birth, for a woman or birthing person to say, it's my fault. It's my fault. I failed at birth, or, you know, it's my fault that dot, dot, dot happened. And I think what is, and it's no wonder to me at all that the perinatal mental health rates, the challenges are as high as they are, because there is such a lack of education and support. And I've been saying for years that I think we have so many issues around breastfeeding rates in this country, because there is a lack of education and there is a lack of consistent informed support. And I think it's the same with birth. And it just breaks my heart that people will blame themselves. And again, you know, when we get people on the doula course, so much of a course is about helping people to reflect on their own experiences so that they can, should they choose to, then go and support other people without bringing all of their stuff to it. You know, it's so important that we've done the work on ourselves.
Yeah.
But the tears, the emotion that comes up in courses when people talk about their experiences, about how they feel like they let their baby down, or they let their partner down, or they let themselves down, the self-blame, it breaks my heart every time.
And it's, you know, when we think about birth trauma, it's not just physical trauma, it's mental trauma, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I really, really struggled with postnatal depression after my first, you know, and again, there's a real stigma around medicating for depression. And I held off and I refused to take anything. And in hindsight, I absolutely should have, because I just suffered for 12 months until I went back to work. And then I felt guilty for handing my baby over to my mum and being able to just walk away from her, just to let somebody else deal with her, because I found it so hard.
Yeah.
And that's something that I still struggle with now. You know, my daughter's 10. I still really struggle with anxiety. You know, people probably think I'm really, really confident and I'm really outspoken, and I am in certain situations, but take me out of my comfort zone, I flake. I'm awful, you know, because I find it, I my anxiety levels go up, and I kind of go, oh, I'll just cancel last minute because I don't think I can do that, because it brings on anxiety in me.
Yeah,
I was not like that before I had kids.
Mm.
I think all stems from my birth experience and my postnatal period,
yeah,
which is why I'm so passionate about helping people to potentially avoid those kind of situations and circumstances, because it has far-reaching impact. You know, it's not just about me, it's about how my experience affects my daughter, affects my husband, my relationships, my friendships. You know, birth, yeah, it spiders out into everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the most phenomenal midwife that I had the pleasure of working with many times as a doula. And she very quickly rose through the ranks because she was just brilliant. And I'm going to name her because I loved her so much. Chantelle Winstanley was her name. And she became a consultant midwife at St. George's Hospital. And she talked to me about the difference between clinical risk and emotional risk. And so when I was with a particular set of clients who were having to navigate whether or not they went down the induction path, she was there as the doctors explained what they would recommend. And it was handled beautifully. The whole thing was handled so well. So the doctors explained what they would propose, and then they left us to talk about it. And, you know, I think that's where having a doula can be so beneficial, in those heightened moments when you're navigating things you hoped or didn't think that you would have to navigate, to have someone there to help you, to have those conversations, to ask the questions, to think about the options. And she talked to us about the difference between clinical risk, which is the risk in this moment, making a decision in this moment. And she was saying, she was in no way dismissing or bad-mouthing obstetricians or doctors. She was saying their focus is on clinical risk. It's on the risk in this moment. and making a decision, the best decision in this moment, what would the medical recommendation be? She was saying for her as a midwife, she also wanted to be able to look at the emotional risk. And what that meant was, what is going to be the long-term impact of this decision-making in this moment? What's going to be the impact on that family in a few days' time, in a week's time, in a month's time, in a year's time, in 20 years' time, making this decision? Because when it comes to birth, as you've just so eloquently shared, the decisions that we make, the experiences that we have, can have an impact on us and the way that we show up as parents and how we feel as ourselves. And there's the difference for me between a positive and negative birth experience is how somebody feels about themselves afterwards. That's it. Doesn't matter what kind of birth it was. But if you come out feeling, you know, empowered, positive, you know, proud of yourself, then you are far more likely to connect and bond well with your baby and to have a you know, a better, easier ride of it as a new parent than someone who comes out feeling like they've been run over by a truck or that they failed or that they are lesser as a person as a result of this experience.
Yeah.
That's so important.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's, you know, I think people may think that, you know, hypnobirthing teachers have this kind of natural, normal, physiological birth agenda. And yes, I know lots of people do want a vaginal birth and they want a natural, unmedicalized birth. And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's definite benefits with that.
For sure.
But I have clients who come to me and they do C-section prep courses.
Yeah.
One of my clients had a very traumatic first C-section, emergency treat a C-section, and she decided that she would like to have another cesarean birth and came to me to prep for it. And it's so important, even that's so important, because yeah, there are things that you can ask for with this, with the cesarean birth, that you will not get a standard. I will not go into a rant around why I do not understand that they do them, these things as standard, because they are quick, easy things that they can do, which they should be doing for everybody, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But they don't. And if you don't ask, you don't get.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she had an amazing, healing cesarean birth. Yeah. It wasn't the fact, it wasn't the C-section itself that traumatized her the first time around. It was how it played out, how it occurred and how it made her feel.
Yeah.
And that second C-section was a healing experience for her.
Yeah. It's the whole knowledge is power thing, isn't it? And, you know, I love that. You're saying exactly what I hear a lot of the time around doulas, the assumption that we have an agenda that it's all about, you know, home births, unmedicated births, pain-free births, that kind of thing. And again, I think we are very aligned in that we are about supporting people to have the best possible birth experience that they can have in their unique set of circumstances. So, yeah, I mean, to be with, and I have been with several doula clients having a positive healing cesarean birth after a first awful traumatic birth experience, that's just magical. It really is.
Yeah. It's I think it's so important. You're right. Knowledge is power. Whether that's you learning about physiology or advocacy, or, you know, and it applies to birth partners as well.
Yeah.
By the way, you haven't
absolutely
talked about birth partners, but they also, you know, need to do some level of prep. And if you're doing a course, they should be joining you to do that course.
It's the together, actually, I think is so important. And the preparation, not just for the birth, but for afterwards. So many people focus on the birth moment, and it's a moment, you know, whereas you're opening up a portal to all being well, to parenting, to having a child in your life and thinking about how on earth do you raise this small, very dependent being? You know, what are your choices around feeding, sleeping, all the things.
Really, really important. Yeah. I mean, like you said earlier about breastfeeding, you know, if you're planning to breastfeed, you should be doing some prep. You should be doing some education. It doesn't come easily to everybody. It doesn't come naturally. You and baby are learning. It's a learned skill. You are learning how to breastfeed, you know, and that can be really hard if you don't have the support. So, yeah, I think it does extend past the birth and into the postnatal period for sure.
So your second point was around women and, you know, those messages that we've received in our lives around expecting to be compliant, the good girl, and all of those kind of things. And I think we have talked about advocacy. I wonder, and I mean, what comes up for me when you say that is not just only about in this lifetime, but it's generational. You know, I think we carry so much in with us. I heard something extraordinary, which is, you know, you and I existed in the wombs of our great 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 grandmothers or something. So, you know, we've been exposed to an awful lot of things, beliefs, traumas, you name it, over time. I think we carry far more in with us than we ever realize. So yes, if, you know, certainly as women, that those beliefs, it's not just in this lifetime, but what did our mothers grow up believing, and our grandmothers and our great grandmothers?
Yeah. And it's breaking generational trauma, isn't it?
Yes.
And it applies to birth, and it applies to parenting as well. And, you know, I think perhaps you and I come from a generation where our upbringing, or speaking personally, my upbringing was very authoritarian.
Yes.
So, you know, and coming from a, you know, Asian family as well, you know, I think you are taught to respect your elders and do as you are told.
Yes.
That's the message that you've received all the way throughout your upbringing, that will apply to every aspect of your life. So I'm trying to parent my children slightly differently, and be more respectful of their feelings and their emotions. And yes, sometimes I definitely slip into that kind of shouty authoritarian mode, because it's hard to not get into
yeah.
that. But hopefully, you know, the way that I'm bringing them up and the way I'm educating them is going to filter down into the way they interact and the way that they, you know, they handle different situations. And you know, when it comes to birth, my kids have watched birth videos. You know, they when any of them have asked me how, you know, how a baby's made, or I think they were watching, there were some ducks that were, you know, getting it on in the pond, and they were like, what's happening? I'll just tell them.
Yes.
So, you know, and I think, you know, the older generations probably would have made up some kind of fanciful, you know, metaphor around, you know, reproduction, whereas I just told them in an age appropriate way, but I told them what happens. And I think that's really important, so that they're not having to do all the legwork when they're older to prep for if they decide they want to have children, and having to unlearn to the degree that I am, and I have had to, around birth and the safety of birth. So yeah, I think it's, there's work that we can do on the younger generations to help kind of break that cycle.
Exactly. It's something that's come up for me quite a lot with my coaching clients recently, talking. I'm very interested in relationships. I'm interested in intimacy and in people's body relationship with their body image. And what has been coming up a lot is the lack of conversation that existed in families around bodies, around sex, around intimacy. And what that tends to lead to is a sense of taboo, and also a lot of shame, that people have, carry a lot of shame around the beliefs that they have, or, you know, if things are hidden, they become secret, they become underground, they become naughty, you know. And actually, we're all human beings. We all have very similar kind of desires, motivations, you know, relationships with our bodies. So to just start to, I love that idea of just talking openly and honestly. Let's not be shameful about talking to our children about how babies are made or about our bodies, because then they go into going, they have a far more sort of pragmatic approach, I think, to things. My kids were always, I mean, I'm very aware, like you, that I'm very comfortable talking about most things. And I had to make a rule with myself when they were little that I would only answer the questions that they asked, because it would be so easy for me to carry on talking and get excited about, you know, the fact that they wanted information and things. And so I was very, very good at kind of honoring the boundary I set for myself. And then later on, My son came back from school and they were having this chat at school about puberty. And I said, well, is there anything you want to ask me? He went, no, mum. And I went, okay. He was like, I know far too much already. I was like, okay. I mean, I'm not going to apologize for that, but you know, we had to unpick some things. But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? To just think about, what do people know? What are the messages they've heard in their life? And you know, you were talking about those two things, particularly when we were talking about the need for education. The third, the reason why people don't, I think a very big part of that is fear.
Yeah.
Massive part.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I know lots of people who don't do antenatal prep and they don't watch birth videos. They'd rather just not know.
Yeah.
They're terrified. And why are they terrified? Because we have been continually exposed and conditioned to believe that birth is painful and awful and traumatic and terrible. And, you know, I talk about my TV watching habits quite a lot when I teach my classes, because it's kind of good in terms of context of getting the message across. But, you know, I was watching House of the Dragon. I don't know if you've watched
it.
Oh,
my goodness. My son and I have just been watching it. Holy crap.
You know what I'm going to say, right? There's four births in the first season of House of the Dragon. So this is the prequel to Game of Thrones. And the birth at the end of the first episode, I'm not having any more kids now. I know what birth is like. I've given birth three times. I felt traumatized watching that. It was horrific. I mean, it was really, really awful. And that terrifies me, because God knows how many pregnant people or people that are planning to have children have watched that.
Yeah.
And that's going to go straight into their subconscious. Yeah. You know, that's going straight into the subconscious in their little birth folder going, that's what birth's like.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be the really traumatic versions of birth. You know, again, I'm just giving all my TV habits away now. I was watching Emily in Paris,
right,
which is a completely different type of genre of TV show. And her boss is standing next to the dining table in the restaurant in the Eiffel Tower, and her waters break. Now, we know this is a typical TV trope, right? When someone's in labour, their waters break, and oh my God, big gush, and then they've got to get to the hospital as quick as possible. And everyone was fucking because her waters have broken, and then it cuts to her sitting in the back of an ambulance in the bottom of the Eiffel Tower. And I was thinking, why is she in an ambulance?
Yeah.
There's no need for her to be in an ambulance. But all that's doing is just, again, reinforcing this kind of dramatic
drama.
Dramatic version of birth, and this is what we end up, you know, believing that birth is like. So lots of people, when they think about giving birth, they're terrified.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know what, I don't want to know. I'd rather just not know and just let it happen on the day. I don't want to prep.
Yeah. But that's the conversation, you know, that is the conversation, one of the conversations that we have on the doula courses, is around, you know, what do the media want us to believe? What do most people going into pregnancy or birth believe about birth? And then we start thinking about, yeah, exactly, House of Dragon. We think about, I mean, I'm showing my age now, but ER, there was the famous episode of ER guest directed by Quentin Tarantino, because wow, we need someone who is famous for blood, guts, gore and violence to come in and do an episode about birth. It just blows my mind.
I know. And it's not even, you know, it's not just fiction. You know, every time you read a story about birth in the news, the reports are always around tragic circumstances or traumatic births or failings in the NHS. And I think a lot of that is also exacerbating that. You know, people are terrified about going into hospital. They're terrified about what's going to happen. You know, without fail, if I ask somebody, what's one of your greatest fears about birth? It's about baby dying and stillbirth.
Yes.
You know, and that's understandable, but I think it's also exacerbated by the fact that we are confronted with these traumatic stories over and over again. And, you know, even presented with the research and the stats around how many births end in stillbirth, mm-hmm. people will still worry about it.
Of course.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice if we, you know, we also had the positive news cycle? So that there was a balance, but we love our negative stories and the trauma and the drama. We kind of dine out on it a lot now, and I've had to really, in the pandemic, I had to really review my news reading, watching, absorbing tendencies and make a conscious decision not to keep
listening. And yeah. I'm quite political. I keep track of what's going on in the world. I stopped. I moved my news app on my phone to like three swipes, you know, onto my phone, so it wasn't on my first screen that I see. Yeah. And I have to make a conscious decision to go in and dip in and have a scroll through the news, and then I go, no, that's enough, and then I'll switch it off again. Yeah,
absolutely, because I just don't want to be in that constant cycle of fear and doom, and you know, it's a negativity. It's not healthy for my mental state. So I can only imagine for lots of other people it's the same or worse.
Yeah.
Oh, Erin, we could talk all day. I know that. And we have to draw to a close somewhere. Do you have a final thing that you would like to say relating to this to anybody? Any words of wisdom particularly?
Yes, prepping the right way, because I know I've talked a lot about the importance of antenatal education and preparing for birth, but I do feel like you can do it in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. You know, watching loads of birth videos, if they trigger you, is not the right way to prepare for birth. I think you do have to be mindful and follow the right accounts if you're going to go on social media and that's going to be your source of information. You know, there are some very well respected and well known midwives and doctors and birth workers, and everybody has an opinion, right? Everybody has an opinion and everybody has their own bias. And, you know, you may follow somebody who's very leaning towards a very medicalized version of birth versus somebody who is equally just as dangerous and leaning towards, you know, the other end of the scale. So I think be mindful of the information that you're consuming. Yeah. And the bias that can be behind that. And if you are going to do any kind of antenatal prep, make sure that you read the reviews on the educator that you decide to go with, because I think that's really important.
Yes, absolutely. Wrong information
can be quite damaging.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely, absolutely right. And I would also add in that the preparation needs to be about what comes after the birth, not just the birth itself. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much for coming and joining me. Tell people how they can learn more about you and follow you and all the things.
So most people follow me on Instagram, Better Birth UK. I'm also on Facebook, same Better Birth UK, and TikTok, which is interesting. I am on Twitter as well, but I don't use it very much because it's a cesspit. My website is www.better-birth.co.uk.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me. I absolutely loved our conversation, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you've got any questions or any feedback, don't hesitate to come back to us. It's info@nurturingbirth.co.uk. And do follow us on social media @nurturing_birth on Instagram and Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook as well. Please do give us a review if you've enjoyed this episode. We are on Spotify, we're on Apple, and we would love to hear your thoughts about any future episodes you'd like to hear. So do get in touch. Thanks for listening. Bye.